This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. As a presidential election year begins to heat up with the apparent selection or apparent narrowing of the Republican field, what happens with foreign policy, and will the United States speak with one voice in this campaign? Former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn is the co-chair of the Nuclear Threat Initiative. He is also a distinguished professor at, where else, the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. Senator Nunn, good to have you.
Thank you, Dennis. Glad to be with you.
North Korea last week launched a rocket which failed very early in its flight. The immediate assumption was that this was perhaps a delivery device for some sort of nuclear weapon down the line. And the other assumption was they're going to try again very soon. Do you have any information as to just, A, what happened, and B, are they likely to try again soon? Do they have the capability?
Well, obviously they've got problems with their nuclear missile program, but the same missiles that can launch satellites can also launch weapons, and that's why our country correctly objected strenuously, as did the neighbors like Japan, South Korea, and others, to the North Korean launch of that satellite, and particularly after we had made tentative agreement with them about food for restraint, and restraint would include missile launches as well as nuclear program. North Korea is a very dangerous country, a very isolated country, and any time they take these kind of steps, it is of concern. They're also a country that, in spite of their huge poverty and their depriving of their own people, they like a lot of attention. And they'll do almost anything to get attention. So it's not just a nuclear program, it's a craving for recognition. At some point, the North Koreans, if they care at all about their people, and so far the evidence is not encouraging in that regard, they will understand they've got to be part of the community of nations, and they are defying the UN, they're defying their neighbors, they are jeopardizing peace in the area, and they are depriving their own people. So at some point, you have to believe in an age of information that the North Korean people are going to say enough, and the leadership will have to change one way or the other. But we aren't there yet.
In the meantime, should we cut back even further on the humanitarian aid that has been going there?
Well, we certainly should not deliver large amounts of supplies which could be diverted to their military for military purposes. You don't ever want to say that people get in a very dire situation. You've got millions of people starving. You wouldn't help. But I would say right now we ought to be very cautious and very slow on anything that could end up encouraging that regime in the direction they're now headed.
How serious is the immediate threat from North Korea in terms of nuclear weapons?
I think it's mainly one of accident, miscalculation, but they are very capable of miscalculation. They do things to get attention, and they do things that are very provocative. They certainly carry out acts of violence at sea. They've killed a lot of South Koreans. So it's a dangerous place. I don't think anyone really wants a deliberate war there. It would be devastating. North Korea would lose it very decisively with the U.S. and South Korea and Japan allied. But it would kill really millions of people, and the capital city of South Korea would be largely destroyed. So the danger is accident, miscalculation, renegade behavior that turns into total misjudgments about what other people are going to do. That's always a danger with North Korea.
Since we have so little official relations with them, doesn't that make it harder to gain leverage with them?
Yes, and I think we ought to, in spite of all the difficulties and frustrations, we ought to maintain dialogue with them because I've been to North Korea and I've spent time there talking to them. I've been to the DMZ a number of times. Their miscommunications could cause war, and so you need to have clarity of communications on both sides as much as we can get.
Here in Georgia, there have been a couple of people-to-people exchanges that are in the works anyway, an effort to bring the North Korean National Symphony here, an effort to bring a choral group from the Metro Atlanta area there. Does that kind of thing make a difference in an atmosphere as politically charged as this, or does just the symbolism of it send the wrong message at a time when we're trying to be very firm with them?
Well, we've been firm with the North Koreans for many, many years. We've had a war with them. I don't fear people-to-people contacts. I think those things, to me, don't have a real downside risk, not significant. When they have an upside possibility, you never know when people-to-people is going to spread and when it could be contagious, particularly in an age where even in North Korea, one of the most isolating countries in the world, the information revolution has got to be making a difference.
Real quickly, and I know it's hard to go very quickly on Iran. However, the Israelis, in Prime Minister Netanyahu's last visit here, made it very clear that they will set their own limits on when they will take some sort of action against Iran. Is the United States prepared for that, or do we have a situation where Israel will make its own decisions and the U.S. may have to go along?
Well, Israel will make its own decisions, but I certainly think they will take into account what the United States government thinks, and I think they'll take into account what our military people are telling their military people, what our intelligence people are telling their people. We have close relationships with Israel, always have, and they're very strong now. They fear an existential threat if Iran gets a nuclear weapon. I think if I were in Israel, I would probably feel that way. I think a war with Iran now would have huge downside. Of course, them having a nuclear weapon also has huge downsides, including, in my view, one of the most significant is the proliferation in the area. They won't be the only country that has nuclear weapons. There'll be a number of others that will want them, and that will be a very, very unstable Middle East. So we have a dilemma here, but I do believe on the more encouraging side, the Iranians are being squeezed very hard now, much harder than they've ever been squeezed before. The Europeans have cut off the purchase of oil. That's driven down the price of oil, even to countries that are continuing to buy their oil. The Chinese are getting more oil through the Straits of Hormuz than the United States is, so they have a huge stake there. So I hope the Iranians will eventually realize that they, too, have to be part of the community of nations. One other thing that I think is important, the Ayatollah there, who is, of course, a religious leader, but also has huge influence in government policy, he basically has said over and over again that possessing a bomb would be a sin. Now, based on their behavior, I don't believe that's the governmental view. But it is a landing spot, and saving face is all important. So if there is going to be an agreement, if they do give up their enrichment program, then they've got to have a landing place, and I think that is a bright spot on a very dark cloud.
Are they very close to developing the capability for a nuclear weapon?
I don't have any insight on that beyond what I read on intelligence reports in the public domain. I think you get in disputes about whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years. But our own intelligence does not yet believe they've made an irrevocable decision. They do believe they've made a decision to have what I would call a virtual capability. But to actually develop the bomb is not yet certain. But everything they're doing indicates they're heading in that direction, and I think that's where we have to assume they're going.
Quick final question about politics. Senator Olympia Snowe of Maine announced she was not running for re-election and cited, among other things, the increasing polarization in Congress. You were there at a different time. Could a Sam Nunn, who were running for the U.S. Senate or for Congress now in Georgia, given the way things are, could a Sam Nunn even get past a primary, let alone win a general election, do you think?
Well, if I was young and tough like I claimed to be back in 1972, I believe I could win again. But who knows? You have no idea. I haven't even seen a poll in recent years. But there's no question our country is more divided than it was. I still think that people in Georgia, the majority, will vote for someone who can actually work with both parties and who can get something done for the country. And I believe we'll come back to that at some point. But right now, we are a very divided state. We're a very divided country.
And does that keep people who are in the center from running or from staying if they're in office?
I think it does. I think it discourages it. We got a lot less moderate Republicans. We have a lot less conservative Democrats elected. Those were the people that for years worked together. At some point, I think people in the country will realize that compromise is the way you have to run a government. You cannot have your way on everything. And right now, both parties seem to have that desire.
Former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn. Senator Nunn, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for your time.
Great honor. Thank you.